Recommendation is to take a minute, evaluate your options. It's going to be okay, but take a breath, get a second opinion, be confident, make conscious choices, because you have choices. You do. We all have choices.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Welcome to Motivation to Write. I'm happy to have you. Thank you for joining me. I have today cancer survivor and founder of The Balm Box, B-A-L-M, Balm Box, Liz Bendit. So let's learn a little bit more about Liz. Liz Bendit was recently named a Woman of Action by the Susan G. Komen Foundation of Kansas and Western Missouri, and that comes as no surprise because after having survived four different cancers over the course of 8 years, Liz has learned from her experience and taken massive action. During her cancer treatments, she realized it wasn't chocolate, flowers, or traditional care packets she needed. Instead, what she needed was aluminum-free deodorant, burn salves, and a seatbelt mini pillow to prevent chafing. She channeled her experience to create ideal subscription boxes and gifts to genuinely help and heal. In fall of 2020, Liz launched Balm Box with a complete line of breast cancer boxes to support other patients.
Okay. Hello, Liz Bendit. How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm doing good. I still feel like I mispronounced it, but I'll get the hang of it. I am excited to talk to you because when you talk about a cancer survivor, you are a cancer survivor.
Yes.
With a capital S on the survivor. You've survived four different cancers over what, a period of about 8 to 10 years? Or 8 years?
So my very first cancer was in, I do it all by the age of my kids. So was in 2009, right? Yeah, my daughter was 3 and my son was 1. And so he's a baby. And it was crazy. I was at the pool with my mom. And my husband had my daughter, you know, in the baby pool. And they were all flopping around. And so this only reason I mentioned I was at the pool is that my mom was looking at a mole on my upper thigh, which I think otherwise wouldn't have been visible, but I was in baby suit. And she was like, "You really need to get that mole checked out. That looks questionable." And I blew her off because, you know, adult daughters, what do we do other than blow off our mothers, right? But my mom kept emailing me and nagging me about going to see a dermatologist until she sent me an email with like a listing of like 14 different doctors within a 10-mile radius of my office. And I was like, "All right, fine, mom, I'll go." And I went and I had melanoma.
Liz, how old were you? If you don't mind me asking.
I'm trying to think. 2009 math. I was 37, 36.
Yeah, that's young.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and I look at then all of the, now that I know more about skin cancer and melanoma in particular, you know, I check every single box for high risk. I'm very fair skinned. I've had 8 bazillion sunburns in my life. I tried desperately to get a tan when I was a teenager. That didn't work. I use tanning beds, which apparently are a great big no-no. Don't do it. I have fought my pasty white skin my entire life, and it came back with a vengeance. So yeah, it was 6 days from diagnosis to surgery, anyone that's gone through any kind of diagnosis, that's banana stuff. But I was really super lucky. It didn't spread. It turned out to be theoretically a no big deal thing. So it was just this like crazy trauma for 1 week and then back to normal. Like,
wow.
And then, 11 months later, So I have a history of breast cancer. My mom and my mother started a family. My mother had breast cancer when I was in college. She was in her mid-40s. And so I had started getting mammograms at 35, right? Because that was just the recommendation because it had been in our family. And so I had an abnormal mammogram. So even though I wasn't quite 40, I had done mammogram. And this is 2010. And when I did the mammogram, it came back with something abnormal. And so I went, so the surgeon had to do biopsy, and part of the pre-biopsy is, you know, she's sitting there feeling you up. And then her hand started snaking up my neck. And she's like, you know, there's something there. I don't like the look of that. Let's go ahead and do a biopsy of that too. So I got a 2-for-1. And that time in 2000, but that was 2010, the breast biopsy was clear, but I had thyroid cancer.
So, oh my gosh. What were you thinking at that point? Because this is your second one.
I was, at that point, I was frantic because it had only been a year. That whole year, I was crazy about the sun, right? I was like slapping on SPF, wearing like giant, ridiculous, ugly hats, washing all of our clothes in this like special dye that makes them SPF, making my poor children miserable. Like they looked like they were, you know, they're covered head to toe in neoprene and they're at the pool or outside. And I've simmered down a little. It's been 10 years, right?
That's good to know.
But my 15-year-old daughter has fought me on the swim shirt. And so our deal is it's a one strike and you're out. If she gets a sunburn, she has to wear a swim shirt. And she's really good about applying that sunscreen because she does not want to wear a swim shirt. She's 15. At that time, it was crazy. I was frantic and I didn't, you know, learning it all now in retrospect, the thyroid cancer is a very slow moving cancer. So nobody is in any great rush to cut it out. But you hear that you have cancer again, less than a year from the first one. And the first one, they were like, your life has to stop. We don't care that you're working. We don't care you have childcare issues. We don't care anything. You were making these appointments for these surgeons and you're going to go the end. Like I was just, there was just no time to waste. Whereas with the thyroid cancer, they're like, okay, well, here's the super long list of all these things that you need to do ahead of time. And you need to go meet with, do all this kinds of specialized blood work. And you need to go meet with an endocrinologist. You need to have a post-op plan. I mean, it was like, so we'll see you in 2 months. And I was like, and I was, it was so frustrating. That whole process was really frustrating. And then, you know, to add insult to injury, I ended up in this very, very rare group of people with a side effect from that surgery. It happens to 2% of patients.
Oh, wow.
So I'm super lucky. I'm what's called hypoparathyroid. It means that my body doesn't process calcium. And it's, because it's so rare, it's not well studied and there's not great treatment for it. And so it took me a number. And so it was very bad. I kept going into what's called hypoglycemic shock. I was in the hospital a lot. But I eventually, over the course of a couple of years of working with both nutritionists and some really excellent endocrinologists, figured out a drug regimen and got myself healthy again. That was really, really hard. That year in particular was really hard. So sick.
Do you know why the difference in the way they treated the two cancers was so drastically different with your?
Because the odds of it spreading were so different. Oh. So what they worry about with melanoma is that once you have melanoma in the skin, if the melanoma cancer itself travels through your bloodstream and gets into, you know, your major organs, that's when it's curtains, right? So they want to make sure that if they see that there's melanoma, you get it out right away because it spreads so fast. Yeah. Whereas with the thyroid cancer, it doesn't spread that fast. There's no huge rush. It's one of those cancers. It's not, if you're going to get a cancer, I would say it's a relatively good one to get. The recovery on it is super high as opposed to melanoma. So I think those are the reasons. I mean, I'm not, and we should be clear, I am not a medical expert. I'm an expert at getting cancer.
Right.
I am in no way, shape, or form a doctor. I don't have that education. So, so that year was really hard. And then I got better and things got kind of back to normal. And then in 2015, I had basal cell. So I had just a little nugget on my nose taken off. And so that one, at least, while not life-threatening, it meant I had to have plastic surgeries to cover the gaping hole in my nose. And so that point, you know, the good news is after my first two cancers, you learn, right? And so I was like, okay, this isn't life-threatening. I can take a hot second. And I interviewed plastic surgeons about what they would do to my face and what their approach would be and what they recommended. And one plastic surgeon wanted to create this line that would be a scar on my face forever that would go like this in order to like cover up the skin on my face. And I didn't like that plan. Like that kind of stinky. And so I did lots of research, and I found the doctor in my community that's known to be great with faces. So also keeping that in mind when it's time to like, you know, do a little touch-up, right?
It's always good to know one of those kind of doctors.
I have a name. He's great. And so he had this like crazy process where he cut out a hole, essentially, you know, where the basal cell was in my nose. And then they put these expanders in my nose, and it was an open wound for, I don't remember, it was like a week to 10 days. It was a long time. Walking around with this patch sewn to your face. Yeah. That was not pleasant. However, then once they stretched the skin out, it was enough skin that they could cover the gap. And so now the scar, I mean, can't tell on video, but like, it's so minor. It's just right here and you don't see it. It's all on the bridge of my nose and it's super smart. So I think, you know, again, you learn, right? You learn like, okay, let's plan. Let's do this around the time. Like I planned that surgery and I put it off until after my son's birthday. So I was like, you know what? I would like to have his birthday party. Like, wow. This is not urgent.
I think by the third time, I think most people would just be angry. Like were you angry at, like, I don't know if you believe in higher power or
the fourth time I was angry. The fourth time, I'm not gonna lie. The third time it was a nuisance, right? It was just annoying. And I also, you know, and I will tell you, I certainly went through a fair amount of feeling guilty for being so vain about my face. And I think that I've, you know, since then, with a little bit more distance from that, I think it was totally fair. And nobody wants to walk around with an unnecessary, you know, U-shaped scar on their chin if they can avoid it. So I think I've learned a little bit about self-care, right, from that one, that, you know, you have to educate for yourself. Like, it's not...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
For the first three cancers, so you didn't have to undergo chemotherapy.
I've never done chemotherapy. Not even cancer.
What? Wow.
I know. It's so lucky. That's the weird thing because the melanoma didn't spread, there was no need for chemotherapy. I opted out of radioactive iodine treatment for the thyroid cancer, which was against medical advice, and I still stand by it. We can get into that, but it's probably not worth it. And then for the basal cell, it's not necessary because it's limited to the skin. So the basal cell means that it hasn't spread. It's just right there in your skin. Once you cut it out, you're done. The cancer's gone. And then then you fast forward to 2017, and I had an abnormal breast, just regular mammogram again. And this time around, when I went to go get the biopsy, again, I saw it more as a nuisance, like, oh, whatever, I must have dense breasts. Like, this is just, you know, 9 years ago, it was no big deal. Like, this is going to be nothing. And so I was kind of like, wait, what? Dang it. Bullshit. Like, this is, then I was mad. But again, at least I had learned, right? I had learned from the first three that you can take a hot minute and look at your options, decide what you want to do, decide on your treatment plan, and then move forward. That the monster rush that happened with the melanoma was not, I mean, that was necessary for that particular cancer, but there wasn't going to be any meaningful change in the growth of the cancer in if I took 2 to 3 weeks to decide what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And what I see in a lot of cancer patients is the minute that you hear that you have cancer, you immediately want to get it out, right? Like you were like, mm-hmm. oh my God, I have cancer, like cut this shit out. And right. I think that we are, and what I've learned is that there is not like, we would love all of our doctors to be, have a perfect, like have, science is more art than science, or I'm sorry, medicine is more art than science. That's what I'm trying to
right.
say.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Medicine yeah. is more art than science in that you, there's nuance to it. There's mm-hmm. plus and minus to every single treatment. And especially after falling into the 2% with my thyroid cancer, I started to look at, well, what are the potential side effects? Because that side effect that I'm living with day in and day out, mine is really hard to live with. It's mm-hmm. really, really hard. My lips are always a little bit numb. My fingertips are always numb. I have to be really careful about making sure I space my various medications out before I, you know, after I wake up and before I exercise. Like there's just a lot that I have to manage. And so I'm very cognizant of what am I giving up? Like what are the side effects of any potential treatment? And is it worth the benefit that treatment is going to give me? Mm-hmm. And I learned, and so that's the beauty, right, of having gone through this a couple of times, is that maybe I have a little bit of a false confidence that it's not going to kill me. It's just going to stink. But that was certainly my experience. And you know, anyone that ever asks me for advice, that's always what I say is take a hot sec, right? Just look yeah. at what your choices are, because you do have choices. And so a lot of times, I think especially older women,
yeah,
they know what to do and they follow those instructions to the T and they don't ask questions and they don't think that there are alternatives, and there are. And what I mean by alternatives, I don't mean like hokey alternative medicine where, you know, you're sniffing lavender instead of, you know, legit.
Right.
I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that there are a number of side effects to various treatments, and you have to go in knowingly. And I think if you go in knowing what those side effects are going to be, you're going to be so much better off and better able to handle them, manage them, because you chose it, right? Mm. As opposed to it being forced on you. At least for right. me, that's what I think.
Right, right. So the breast cancer you caught early because mm-hmm. you would get mammograms regularly.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So what was that, like stage one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was DCIS, which means that it was limited just to the ducts or something. So mm-hmm. it had not spread. They got clean margins, they got it out. I was able to get away with a lumpectomy and not a mastectomy. So I mean, yeah. all these things are just, I am like the poster child for get your mammogram, because you can get right. out with so much less aggressive treatment, right? Then when yeah. it's bigger, you have to then contemplate a mastectomy. And at that point, do you do one or two? You know what I mean? Do you do
right.
all or yeah, nothing? Yeah. And I did also do the genetic testing to see if I carried the BRCA gene, and I don't. So I think had I at that moment learned that I was a carrier, I probably would have opted for a mastectomy. But because I'm not a carrier, I chose, and I'm young and I'm mm-hmm. not menopausal yet, like I chose to go ahead with the lower end treatment. Mm-hmm. They did give me the most aggressive radiation treatment. But that to me felt like a fair trade-off, right? Because radiation, it's really intense. It sucks for 6 to 8 weeks, but then you're done, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to chemotherapy, which again, I didn't need to do because it hadn't spread.
Mm-hmm.
So had it spread, I would have needed to do chemotherapy, or had it been more aggressive cancer, that would have been a different scenario. But I was really, again, they caught it early enough, I didn't have to contemplate it. It wasn't a choice.
Right. Yeah. I know for myself, I don't get regular mammograms, and I know that that's something I should do. Cancer has really hit home for me because in January, my mother was diagnosed with stage 3 lymphoma. Oh. And so, yeah. And that was a shock because no one ever thinks that first of all, no one ever thinks that they're going to get cancer. And then no one really ever thinks that their parents are going to get cancer. That's the thing you really hope never happens. And so, yeah, we went through all of that. Like after, we actually didn't get a diagnosis until like a month after she had been in the hospital. It took forever for that to come through the pipe. But she had to do, she went through chemotherapy because at that point it had started to spread. Yeah. And it's, the chemotherapy process is very hard on the body, I learned.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think radiation is hard on the body. And I really struggled with radiation, and I'm grateful every day I didn't have to do chemotherapy, because I think that there's general agreement for most cancer patients that chemo is worse. And So it is real. It is brutal on your body. It is just brutal. You're making yourself really sick. And, and I'm not suggesting it's not important. It is important, and it's life-saving for many, many people, but it's so hard. And it's and then thing is, women also, it's brutally hard emotionally to lose your hair, to lose your eyelashes, to lose, you know, your fingernails, like all of those things that make us feel feminine, you know, are, it's hard.
So then let's talk about the how important self-care is for the cancer patient, and what are some things that they can do in terms of self-care.
So I think a lot of things. So this is, you know, I launched a business around this concept, right? So I think it starts, it all starts with learning to ask for help. It is so hard to ask for help, especially those of us that are a little older. Like, I'm the one that gets stuff done, right? Like, I don't need help. I help others. So for those of us that are caregivers, it's really, really hard to ask for help. So I would start with that.
Liz, can I interrupt you for a moment? Why don't you tell us about your business? Because I forgot about that.
Sure.
Why don't you
tell us what you do? So when I was in 2017, when I was going through radiation treatment, you know, one of the really nice things about being 46 years old and having breast cancer is everyone keeps claiming how young you are. So it was but you're so young. You're gonna be fine. You run long distance. You're gonna be fine. You're great. No problem. I went in kind of cocky, right? Like, oh, this would be no big deal. I'm just gonna. I made all of my appointments for like 7:45 in the morning, and then I went so that I could be into the office by 9. Like, I was not slowing down for this thing. Like, the only change to our life was going to be that my husband had to do elementary school drop-off because I had to go to radiation. Like, that was it. I was still leading my daughter's Girl Scout troop. I was working full-time. I was running 20 miles a week. Like, I did not plan on slowing down. Like, there was no plan to slow down. And so going back to self-care, a little pause, slow down, you know, just plan on it. My little two tips. So I got into radiation, and my skin did not cooperate, and I burned to a crisp, and I was allergic to some of the things that they tried to give me. And so that made things worse. And I just couldn't, I was in so much pain. And it also made me so deeply exhausted. Like, my body, I felt like my body just was heavy. And so I went from being this just get it done person to a loaf on the couch. And on top of which, you don't realize all the little things that you need. So, for example, I couldn't wear any of my bras anymore because they had underwires, and the underwire was poking right where the radiation burns were. And you can't totally tell here, but I need to wear a bra.
You need to what?
I need to wear a bra.
Oh, okay. You need the support.
Yes. These girls don't go without little help. And so I needed an alternative to a bra. And the problem is, when you think that you need it, you need it right then, and then you haven't planned for it, then that's the moment when you don't have time, effort, ability to go shop for it, find it. So I'm just like searching for this stuff. And then I needed, to do radiation, you have to have aluminum-free deodorant, and you have, you know, obviously any kind of lotions, and there's just any number of like palliative things that you need, and they're not prescription, right? So it's not stuff that the doctor gives you, right? It's just all the stuff that kind of helps you get through. So whether it's warm socks or fuzzy blankets or like the nurse at my surgeon's office made everyone these fabulous little T-bone shaped pillows, and you would put it between your seatbelt and mm-hmm. your body, mm-hmm. and the seatbelt wouldn't hurt your chest. It was brilliant, right? It was mm-hmm. like, that was my favorite item. And to this day, I'm still mad at my dog who's sleeping right here who chewed it up.
But, oh no.
But you know, like again, like who knows that you need a seatbelt pillow, right? Like
All,
and then other things were like the weight of my arm would aggravate the radiation burn. And so I was always looking for like a pillow or something to kind of tuck underneath my arm, you know, to kind of get the weight off, but that not rub. Like, so it's all, you know what I mean? These are all the things that you need. And, and I, there's no radiationrelief.com. Where is it? And so that was really at the time where the thought came, I need to do something different. I need to launch this business. And so I started in all of that free time. Joke, there wasn't much. Writing out a business plan for this idea. And it really wasn't until the pandemic hit that all of a sudden I really did have a lot of free time, and I cranked out that business plan, and it looked really good. And I launched the Bomb Box in September. So BALMBOX, the Bomb Box.
And what comes in the box?
So there are different options depending on your treatment path. So I'm still playing around, but one of the things that I did before launching the box, or at least as part of that business plan, is I did some market research. I'm a marketer, so I start with, let's confirm that there's an audience for this product and it's not just me. And so I sent in, I created a survey using SurveyMonkey, and it kind of had different paths, right? So if you were a cancer survivor, you kind of took and you answered a certain set of questions. And if you have ever bought gifts for cancer patients, you went down another set of questions. And the survey went viral, which was awesome. And so it ended up collecting almost 600 responses, which was.
Wow. Awesome. How many?
600.
Wow. That's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's impressive. I feel really good about its statistical validity, right?
Yeah.
And so there were a ton of learnings, and one was I was not alone. When I asked cancer patients to rate on a scale of 1 to 3, 1 being low, 3 being high, you know, items that would potentially go in some kind of care box for them, the top performing items were all functional. They were things like lotion for burns, lip balm, aromatherapy, side pillows, fleece blankets. And then the absolute worst performing items were things that I consider kind of more kind of fun or inspirational, right? So a kicking cancer tote bag or a worry stone or a framed quote or a cancer awareness pin, that those were things that at the moment just did not appeal to them. And I think when I go online, I say, okay, cancer gift basket, what you see is a lot of pink, right? You see a lot of, or, you know, just you see a lot of kicking cancer, I kick cancer's butt, coffee mugs and tree ornaments. And that's not lining up with what cancer patients actually need and say they want. And so I thought, well, this would be kind of a cool opportunity to connect those two dots, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't gifting be beautiful and functional? Mm-hmm. Why do gifts have to be silly, junk, right?
Right.
That was the foundation behind the Bomb Box. And so I'm starting with breast cancer products, and then of course looking at different ailments, so as we continue to grow. So that's the story behind the Bomb Box.
And that's actually, I love that story, because a lot of times when we come across someone in our lives who is suddenly diagnosed with cancer, we don't even know what to say to them, first of all, let alone what to purchase as some type of gift. And I can imagine that a tote bag or a pen is not going to really do much for someone who's undergoing strenuous chemotherapy. And we don't ever think about just practical things like we do for like sick people. Like if someone has a cold or the flu, like we always think in terms of practicality, oh, we'll buy you some aspirin or hot soup.
Right.
But we don't ever think that way with cancer patients. We want to go straight for, as you said, like the pretty fluffy stuff that should come at the end and not during the treatment.
That's the piece where I don't want to disparage that stuff. There is a place for it. Right. It's just not when you're in the middle of treatment. That would be my 2 cents. I think when you're in the middle of treatment, what you want is functional health. And that when at the end of treatment, when you can celebrate that you got done with it, then you get your warrior t-shirt or your, you know, I Kick Cancer's Booty coffee mug. That's great. But I think that when you're in the middle of it, it's really funny because I was diagnosed in the fall of 2017, and it was right before all the pink breast cancer awareness October stuff. And so I was constantly driving to get my radiation treatment through a sea of pink ribbons. And I still, to this day, have this like real love-hate relationship with it, right? That, you know, it was just, I don't know, they were pink at me. Which is such an irrational response, but it was just, I could not get there while I was in the middle of it. In fact, my friends threw me this really fantastic party. They called it the finish line. We run together, right? And we do races. So it was like the finish line party. And they said, you know, is there anything in particular you want other than, you know, flourless chocolate cake, which obviously is no pink balloons. Like they were not allowed to put out pink balloons.
That's so funny.
I was such a turd about it. So yeah, I don't know. But now I'm fine. Now it's great. Now I'm a big supporter. But it took me a couple years to get past it.
What can we do for people as far as supporting them emotionally if they're undergoing some type of cancer treatment?
You know, it is so funny to me how it's the smallest things that to me at the time were so helpful and meaningful. I had friends that just would text regularly, and think about it from our point of view, from like a caregiver's point of view, it's no time or effort to say, thinking of you, checking in, sending hugs and kisses, right? Mm-hmm. Like that, just knowing that someone acknowledged that I was having a shitty day was super helpful. It's so little, right? So that to me was really, really helpful. I mean, my friend Stacy did come over with Jello shots, and that was really fun.
Oh my gosh, chocolate cake, Jello shots. All the good stuff. All the good stuff. So how can you tell us a little bit more about some of those practical things, like the lotions, the deodorants? I was reading one of your blog posts. Oh, you have to tell us about your daughter too. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I was reading a blog post about your daughter. There is this, can you talk a little bit about the deodorant situation?
Oh, that's my mother.
That was your mother. Okay.
So my mom is so crazy. So, I mean, I love my mom. She is the best. My mom she is a trained librarian. She has her master's degree in library science. Okay. Anytime, and she's just like the family project manager, and she's so super organized. It's fantastic. Like you can rely on her for anything. So she is so organized that when I got my pathology back from my biopsy, I, you know, brought it over for her to look at. You know, she'd had breast cancer before, and she went up to her office and pulled out her pathology report from like 1995. I don't know, 92, something like that. Like, who holds on to that? Like, I don't still have mine. It was great. We could compare and contrast. So I was going through, you know, I had to go through radiation. I knew I needed aluminum-free deodorant. I went to Whole Foods and bought an aluminum-free deodorant, and it smelled bad, and I sweat through it, and it was really gross. So then became the odyssey of finding a really excellent aluminum-free deodorant. And so this was kind of like a pastime of mine. It ended up kind of frantically going to, you know, Whole Foods and Sprouts and any place that had the natural homeopathic stuff. Deodorant. And I spent easily $200. It was ridiculous on crappy deodorant. And my mom volunteered. She goes, you know, I think I still have the one I use. Let me give it to you. And it was a 20-year-old deodorant.
That is so funny. Oh my gosh. She still had that.
Who holds on to that, right?
Oh my God. Well, you know, mothers hold on to everything.
They sure do.
My mother has stuff from when I was a baby, but geez. So did you use it?
No, I didn't use it for a while. It's so gross. 15 years.
But I think it's important that people hear this because we don't. So aluminum deodorant, I mean, it doesn't sound like it's
aluminum
good for anyone.
Aluminum. I am a regular secret user, and I guess one of the key components of deodorant that like helps stop sweat stains is aluminum. And gosh, I'm going to get this wrong, but when you're going through radiation, there's something about how if there's aluminum in the deodorant, it can intensify the radiation. And so they give you exactly the right amount of radiation very specifically, and you don't want anything to monkey with that amount, right?
Yeah,
okay. Because the aluminum monkeys with that amount. That's right. My very non-technical, non-medical explanation, I'm sure.
I'll just
give you a better one.
And that's something that I would never think about if I were thinking about.
And so it's one of the things we include in the bomb box, or at least the radiation essentials boxes. It's just this really great, and I've tried it. It smells good too, this lavender deodorant, and it sprays. And so that's the thing that's really great about it is that because it sprays, you don't have to, like, especially if your skin is really sensitive, you just spray it and then it doesn't hurt.
Okay.
Well, it's just little thoughtful things like that, right? Like the deodorant, certainly lotion. Anyone going through radiation needs lotion. And I will say that most women, you tell me about your mom, I imagine I hear lots of women complain that they get really dry during chemotherapy. So everyone needs lotion. Mm-hmm. It's full stop. And especially if they have a port, that port location, it gets raw, it hurts. So I don't know if your mom used a port or not.
I don't think so, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think that lotion is a universal item for both radiation and chemotherapy. And I think really anyone going through a lot of medical treatments, I think hospitals in general are just super dry and you end up needing lip balm and lotion. Like those are just palliative in general. Water bottles. I've never heard enough. Every single appointment, are you getting enough to drink? Are you hydrating? Like that, it's one of the silliest things, but it's one of the best ways to care for yourself is to hydrate. And so, I mean, it's really important to have good water bottles. It's silly, right? But like a good water bottle helps enormously, right? And staying hydrated, it's functional, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of women that do chemotherapy do use the cold caps. I don't know if your mom did that or not to try to keep her hair. Yeah, it seems pretty miserable to me, but either way, one of the complaints about chemotherapy is you're cold. So
yes, I was just going to mention that blankets make good gifts.
Yep, blankets. So you always need them, and I think they're also good reminders to rest. So we have a really fabulous fuzzy blanket as part of our care package. One of the things that I never used, but actually rated super highly in that research, which was interesting to me, was the aromatherapy. That I've never been a very big user of aromatherapy, but people swear by it. And so there's interesting studies out there as to what, you know, whether or not it, I don't know that it's curative, but certainly if it's like emotionally palliative, and it certainly smells good to have lavender scented items or citrus or things that you find soothing. I think that aromatherapy is really a great gift. And I think anytime that you feel like you're doing something for yourself that's going to make you feel better, there is something about that control. But I keep coming back to there's nothing, one of the worst things about being a cancer patient is feeling out of control, at least for me. That was certainly true. And I think that anything you can do to make it feel like you're taking control of your situation or giving someone control of their situation is only a net positive, right? That to me is really important. So that to me might be one of the best parts about aromatherapy is, you've got your little, your bracelet and your stopper and you add the scent and you put it on, you feel like, okay, I've done that for myself. Like I'm being proactive. Right.
Yeah.
I think that there's something to that, and it smells good. So, and if it makes you relax, all the better. And then, different pillows.
Oh yeah, pillows are big. Yeah, I remember. I think my aunt, she bought my mother. There was some pillow somewhere, or Target. I don't know, but there was. I remember this big deal about getting this pillow. One side effect from the. I don't know if it was, it seemed like it was actually from both the cancer and the chemotherapy was her taste, like her sense of taste.
Taste receptor issues are huge. Yes.
Yeah.
There's like, I include ginger mints in boxes, but to be fair, there's nothing that I can do that's non-prescription to solve taste receptor issues. What I understand from chemotherapy patients in particular is that when you get that first dosage of the chemo, it just sends this really bad taste into your mouth. And so lots of patients suck on mint. And so I like ginger because I think it also, if you're feeling, it's like a double whammy. It's a good flavor in your mouth. And if you're feeling nauseous, ginger is good for nausea. So I focus on that.
Yeah. So if we could talk a little bit more about, like, I know we mentioned the support that family and friends can give by texting, making sure that you know that the person knows that you're there. Does it help when people say things like, this will be over soon, or you'll get through this, or... this too shall pass.
Yeah, I think that's hard. I know where you're going with it. but I think that it is impossible. It's so subjective, right? It's so subjective. It's down to the individual. And it's well meaning. And I think that it's more, I would much rather someone reach out with something mundane than not reach out at all. Mm. Right? So knowing that you're being thought of, knowing that you have a support network behind you, to me, even if what they're saying is benign or even marginally annoying, it's still better than not hearing from them at all. Because there's nothing worse than feeling like you're going through the worst part of your life and no one is acknowledging it.
Yeah.
So that would be that's what I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, what about for like care for the caretaker?
Oh man, that's a great one. I am not an expert in that.
But it's a big issue. It's a huge issue. Yeah. Because I can like remember when my mother, when she was first in the hospital, because we didn't know exactly what, except that there was something large there.
Yeah.
But from the time that she was released from the hospital after being in for about a week after having discovered something here, and then like a month later to get the diagnosis, like she just was getting weaker and weaker because she wasn't eating because it was like on top of her viscera, whatever that where the food goes into. Yeah. And so I was staying with her, and this is just when COVID was.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was staying with her, and it felt like, I kind of feel like I know what a mother must feel like when she first has a kid. Cause it was like when she would get up to go to the restroom and she was so weak, sometimes she would stumble and I would have to get up with her. And I just felt, and plus it's my mother that has cancer. So it's all that emotional stuff. And then I would, when she was in the hospital, because she kept having to go back to the hospital because she was getting dehydrated because she was eating. And so I was staying overnight in the hospital with her. And there were times when I just felt so emotionally and physically drained. Like I just needed someone to help take care of me. And that's just, I think that's a huge issue with caretakers.
I have no doubt. And I think my four bouts of cancer have shown me repeatedly that it takes a village, that there is no one person that's your person. I have been phenomenally lucky that I've had, and that my mom and dad are both with me, that they live locally. I have this incredible group of girlfriends who are on top of things. At the time, both my husband and I were working full-time, and we had a full-time nanny So a good bit of childcare we could just kind of shunt off because the kids we always have loved our nanny, and she just stepped up in a way that was amazing and I was grateful for. So I was so lucky that I never put all of my caretaking on any one person, right? Yeah. And I think that is perhaps the lesson. It takes a village. You got to bring in your village. You got to bring in, you need backup. You got to have troops so that no one person is taking the brunt, right, of the hard work, because it is hard work. And as a result, I was really lucky that neither my husband or my mom or my girlfriends felt particularly put out because they shared the burden, you know?
And
to me, that would be, so working the other way around as you as the caretaker, I guess my two cents would be bring in the troops. Like, where are the church ladies? Where are the, you know what I mean? Where are your friends? Where are her friends? You know, where are the family members? I mean, everyone can take a turn and it's healthy and good, right? It's, you don't have to feel like you have to be there for every single minute of drama. And that gives you that opportunity to take a breather because it's exhausting. I mean, and it's intense, right?
And she does. My mom has like a lot of friends. She has a gazillion friends. I think the interesting thing was that it seemed like she was, I don't want to say she didn't want their help, but she was reluctant to accept their offers for help. And well, so I and think
that's yeah. where, and that's where it's so uncomfortable. And I mean, it's easy for me to say, well, you just need to tell your mom what's what. I mean, I would have a hard time telling my mom what's what. So like, I hear you on how hard that is. But I do think that, I think that it's all, I mean, it's marketing, right? It's all in the presentation. Mom, your friends love you so much. Can you please let them help? Because they're just bugging me. They really want to be here for you. It would be such a favor to them if you would let them come in and make you dinner. And I'm just going to step out while you have a good visit. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just twisting it a little bit. And,
Use your PR
skills.
Exactly.
And the best part about that is it's true that the village does want to help, but you have to tell them that it's okay to help.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And even I felt that with even some of my own friends, they didn't quite know how to be there for me. But I didn't really know. I kind of felt guilty or like, not guilty, I didn't want to be a burden or, so I kind of just didn't ask for help myself.
And you know what I mean? And that's the problem. And I'm telling you, like that to me, I mean, you'd have to ask my friends, but I feel like they're so proud of what they were able to do for me and our family. And that hopefully, you know, I gave, and it strengthened our relationship, right? Like I've never been closer to those women since all of this cancer. And maybe that's one of the positives that came from it, right? Is that you kind of learn who your friends are, certainly, when you go through all these dramas, you know, who dumps you like a hot potato and who kind of continues to check in. So, and it doesn't take much, right? It's just the texting a friend and saying, okay, mom's stable. She needs some dinner. Can you stop by Boston Market and grab me something? And, or, you know, can you take my mom for a walk so that I can have a shower, you know, like whatever it is, it's, you do have to employ your own self-care as a caregiver, or else, you know, what use are you to your mom if you're just completely fried and or ill yourself, you know?
And I
do think, again, that the village wants to be there. They just have to be invited. And I think that's the hard part too, is that every patient is different and has a different, probably, level of comfort with what they'll let their networks in on, right? Certainly right after surgery, when I had to walk around topless, was perhaps not when I wanted lots of visitors, right? But you know, once I could be clothed, things got easier, you know. So you invite people in at the right moment, I guess is what I'm getting at.
And I think
also kind of assigning people different tasks is also really helpful. You know, my husband was in charge of transportation. My mom was in charge of medicine. You know, there were, everyone kind of had their role.
I think that's good advice.
I've done it a couple times.
I think you're more than qualified to speak on this. For sure. So tell me, do you fear being diagnosed again with cancer?
Do I fear it? This is going to sound terrible. I expect it. I would love to think that I'm done. But at this point, if I get another cancer, I'm now at this point seeing them as a nuisance and not life-threatening, which perhaps is very Pollyannish and stupid. But that's probably my own self-preservation, like, well, whatever. If it happens again, it does. But now I know how to deal with it.
Right. Yeah.
I got a surgeon on speed dial.
Okay. Yeah. You should have a few of them on speed dial. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a pretty powerful position to be in, where you know it's possible and it probably will happen, but you've been through it so many times, you're not completely devastated by that idea.
No.
Or paralyzed in fear. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no value in that. And I think that's certainly what I've learned a lot through this whole trial and error, and learning to kind of advocate for myself and make my own decisions. Two separate but very similar ideas that give me more confidence, right? So choosing not to do radioactive iodine because the odds of a side effect were 5%, which was 2.5 times the odds of the side effect that I'm now currently living with, was a thoughtful choice. And do you know what I mean? I did the research and I made the decision, and I can live with that decision. I also made another very controversial decision with my breast cancer, where I chose to do, you know, so if I did the lumpectomy, and they said after your lumpectomy, you're roughly about a 40 to 45% chance of recurrence if you don't do anything else. If you do radiation, it cuts it in half. Okay, great. Well, that number works for me, right? That trade-off is worthwhile. Yeah. Then after radiation, they say, okay, well, the treatment that we're super in love with right now is called hormone therapy, where we block all of the estrogen in your body, and your body goes into early menopause, and you have every single possible terrible menopause experience and side effect, and plus 25 more. And that drug will take you from around a 20% chance of recurrence to around 10. Or maybe it's like 15 to 8. I think it's 15 to 8. And I was like, not worth it. Yeah. It's not worth it to me. There are so many other women where that trade-off to them, they see it subjectively so differently, right? And they feel like they want to do every single thing possible to know that they have done what they can to reduce the odds of the recurrence. And I look at it as, I made myself crazy for a year after melanoma, wearing long sleeve shirts and 100-degree heat and big hats and all this stuff. And I ultimately realized, like, you have to kind of make some kind of trade-off in living. And I've chosen that I don't want all of the side effects that come with hormone therapy, and I'm not going to do it. But it was a thoughtful decision. It was, and it was my decision. And my surgeon was actually fabulous, and she thinks it's not an illegitimate decision. So, and I will tell you another funny thing that my mom and I went through, which is so interesting. She, when she had, you know, remember I told you how she had her pathology report, and we were comparing our pathology reports. They were almost identical, which is super creepy.
Wow. Right? Wow. Identical. Yeah.
Super, super creepy. And at the time I'm trying to think, I was in college, so it would have been early 90s, like 92, 93, that she had her breast cancer. And at the time, so exact same pathology, right? Exact same diagnosis, almost the same age, right? Really eerie. At the time, her surgeons were pushing her to do a mastectomy and a lymph node biopsy. And she was like, gosh, this was caught early. It's really small. Are you sure I have to do all of this really aggressive treatment? And she got 800 second opinions, all the way up to going to the Mayo Clinic to get MD Anderson to find some super specialized person who said, no, that's an overtreatment. You don't need to do all this excessive stuff. You can get away with lumpectomy and radiation, which is what she did. And she brought that back to Kansas City at the time we were living, and they were like they, she had to sign all of this paperwork that she was basically ignoring medical advice, right? That she was going to do something that was against their recommendation, but they would go ahead and treat her anyway. And it was a really big deal, right? This is in the 90s. Now, the no, I, again, exact same pathology. Nobody recommended I get a mastectomy. Nobody recommended that I get a lymph node biopsy. Everyone recommended essentially the exact same treatment, to the point where my mom was like, they're over-treating you, because if it's the same treatment that I got, that I've had to fight for 20 odd years ago, it must be an over-treatment. Like, it was, so I guess this is me coming back and circling back and saying, you have to take a little bit of control. Medicine is a combination of art and science, and you have to decide what you can live with. And so I felt very comfortable that I could live with going through radiation, and that I'm very confident living with the choices that I made not to do the treatment, not to do the hormone therapy. But other women will see that so differently, which is great, right? Like, whatever they feel like they need to do is, that's going to make them feel like they're in control of their treatment plan, to me, is the right answer, right? That's the right answer. The right answer is what you can live with.
That's okay. He has a lot to say too. he has a story to tell of his, or is it a he or she?
She heard my daughter come in, and
Liz, we are out of time.
Well, and it was lovely to chat with you.
It was lovely. Can you tell us where we can find you?
Yes, find the Bomb Box, BALMBOX. So thebombbox.com. And then you can find us on Facebook at The Bomb Box, and Twitter at Box Bomb, and Instagram at Bomb Box IG. You can find us everywhere.
Wow.
The recommendation is to take a minute, evaluate your options. It's going to be okay, but take a breath, get a second opinion, be confident, make conscious choices, because you have choices. You do. We all have choices. And it's all about choosing the path that you, that feels right to you. That would be my two cents.
That's wonderful.
Isn't Liz amazing? Just my mic. Isn't Liz amazing? I love her story. I love how she was able to take something quite tragic. I don't know what's happening with my hair here. Okay, she was able to take something quite tragic that happened to her multiple times, having been diagnosed with cancer more than once. And she was able to, or she took that experience and she created this business to help other people undergoing cancer. And I think that this is the perfect timing for this episode, because it's Valentine's Day weekend. And if you have a cancer patient in your life and you're looking to purchase a gift for them, go check out Liz's website, thebombbox.com, and purchase a bomb box for your loved one, because a lot of times we overlook the needs of people going through particular illnesses. So I think it's just wonderful that this is a very, the bomb box is very specific to people undergoing cancer. So thank you so much for joining me today. And you can follow me on Instagram at Motivation to Write, Facebook at Motivation to Write, and Twitter at Ebony Haywood. You can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter at my website, zazel.com. And be sure to visit my website this Sunday for my big takeaways from my conversation with Liz. And I look forward to next week. I have another fabulous conversation with another fabulous guest. So I hope you'll join me. Have a wonderful weekend and see you next time. Okay, bye-bye.